Welcome to the Agile Wire, brought to you by Wisconsin Agility. We want you to get agile and stay agile. Now here are your hosts, Jeff Bubbles and Chad Beyer.
And we're recording. All right, kick us off, Jeff.
All right, we have Don McGreal back on the podcast. It's been a while since you've been back, since you've been on here. But for those who don't remember, Don's the author of the Professional Product Owner book. He's one of the original creators of the Professional Scrum Product Owner course at scrum.org. He's created Tasty Cupcakes, that website where it's got all those awesome different activities and different ways to do different things with your Agile teams. So many great examples of good content out there. And many, many other things, Don, that I'm not even thinking of right now. So, Don, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. Yeah, you brought up Tasty Cupcakes. That's my redheaded stepchild there. I love it, but I just don't give it the attention it deserves. But hopefully good news soon. We have something in the works in getting a whole rebranding that I don't think I can talk about just yet.
Oh, you can't talk about it. All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
If it doesn't happen, then it's going to be, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's great. You know, I'm actually forgetting, Don, as Jeff did the intro, kind of the kickoff of, like, you know, your role in the product ownership curriculum at scrum.org. But, like, my first product owner course was with you in Tampa, Florida.
That's right.
And it was right before my first face-to-face event with all the other trainers, where I met a few people that led to me talking to them about quitting my job, and everyone was like, yeah, what are you waiting for? You should totally quit your job and start your own company. But anyway, so I remember that it's all coming back to me now that was the first, you know, my first experience with the product owner course was with you, which I think was pretty common for a while there. You were sort of like the Jedi master, and everyone was like, teach us the ways of product ownership.
Yeah, they get to do it my way. Which isn't necessarily the best thing, but if you tell my stories.
I think it's an interesting story, though, Don. Do you want to tell the story of, like, how you created that course? I think it's a fun story.
The product owner one?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so I joined scrum.org in early 2011, by the time I actually got certified to teach the Scrum Master class, like many of us started off with. But I'd spent a lot of time as a product owner over the years. So, and then it was about a year later where I actually went and started teaching the product owner course. So now we're at 2012, and, you know, taught it most of that year, but a lot of it was kind of the tactical things, right? How to write user stories and acceptance criteria and stuff like that. And I had gone through that whole phase myself of, like, in the class, we talk about the journey from scribe to entrepreneur. And I feel that's a journey I've had to take. And so I met Ralph, you know, my co-author, at an Agile conference, Agile 2013, maybe? I forget. But we met that first night. There was like a PST get-together. We were having drinks, and we got on the topic of that course going, yeah, you know, it's a bit too tactical. We want it to be a bit, put more strategic stuff into it. And there's a few of us that agreed. And Ralph's like, I totally agree. I was a product owner too. We should do something about it. And we ended up, like, skipping the rest of the Agile conference. If you don't know, it was like a 5-day conference. Mm-hmm. And apart from the 2 sessions that we were doing, we skipped pretty much every other session, every other event. We were just sitting there building this thing without anyone's permission, really. And then Patricia Kong, who was there from scrum.org, she caught wind of it, and we were showing her some stuff, and she told Ken Schwaber as well. And that turned into a meeting with Ken around proposing a new version of the PSPO. And he basically said, love it, ship it. And very few changes. And that turned into the original steward model for scrum.org. Now every course had 2 people supporting those ones. But yeah, the whole point was, like, let's front load it with strategy. So rather than make it mostly about tactical stuff, it was strategy, then Scrum, and talk about how Scrum can be a tool to implement the strategy, product management, and then the tactical stuff afterwards, product backlog management and release management.
Yeah, that's it's awesome. So it's probably, I would say, Jeff, we can say this pretty easily now. Like the product owner courses are our favorite to teach of all the curriculum. Yeah. And when we're teaching that course, day one, of course, is, I mean, as an instructor, I love diving into the strategy, right? As a business owner, you know, I went back to school and I got my MBA, and my favorite part of that was the strategy work. So like there's so much about day one of that course that's so fun. And we even have, so next week we're even teaching an in-person course with a group of executives. And it's going to be interesting to see, like, you know, how we change things slightly for that audience, because the tactical stuff is really tactical for an executive group. But how important is it, right, for them to have that deep understanding of the connection between strategy at the organization level and product ownership within this Scrum framework, which some of them maybe have never even heard of, right? So, so we're super excited about it. You know, that executive spin.
I just finished a 2-day PSPO course. Again, it's my favorite, obviously, too. Yesterday, and in it, the CTO sat in the first half of the first day. Didn't make it the whole. He just showed up, and everybody's like, "Whoa!" And then, you know, I was thinking, what do I have to shift? But it a lot of it did resonate, right? Because if what we talk about is that journey, we compare the product owner to like an executive of the product, like be a business owner for your product. Like you should have, like any good entrepreneur should have a business model. You should understand your customer and the value proposition and how you're going to get to them and what your revenue streams are and your costs. How many product owners think that way, right? We need, that's a big message of that class. And then vision, value, validate, the three V's. Like this speaks to entrepreneurs. And, and so when they see that that's what they're learning in this class, I think it surprises them quite a bit.
Yeah.
What would you add to the product owner course for executives if you were going to teach that class?
Well, we do. I mean, we do teach an executive course, and we had one that was a kind of a generic leadership course for a while, but we were working with one client doing an agile, a big agile transformation. And I got a chance. We had a lot of success in one area, like their digital area. And it got the attention of their CIO, and the CIO invited me in to talk about, hey, as a CIO, what do I need to know about Agile? And so, and it was very specific. His handler told me he wants five things that he's very specific about this. I'm like, oh, okay. So I talked to all the different people in our organization about like what kind of things we've seen across the different engagements that we've been a part of. And we kind of boiled it down to these five things. And I took it to him and I said, this is what we've noticed. And this is what we'd like, you know, executives to know while doing these things and making them successful. And he really liked them. And he's like, that's what I want you to teach my folks. And he invited me in to do a whole 1-day session with him and all of his direct reports. And it was he was a CIO. There was a CMO from the business, chief marketing officer, and then a bunch of senior VPs. And ultimately, like those five things were, we boiled it down to why, to where, who, what, and how. And that I kind of came up with those after the fact. But the why is, do we all know why we're doing this agile thing? And in that, we have to explain what true business agility is, right? Yeah. Which is why, you guys know, the product owner course kind of starts with like, What do Kodak and Blockbuster have in common? They weren't agile. It's the answer we want to. So agile is not something you throw over to your IT department because they're not getting their projects done on time, right? Agility is what we need to stay in business. So the message in that first part is, what are our goals as a business? And now do we understand how agile can help us achieve those goals? Agile is not the goal. Agile will help us achieve those goals. Mm-hmm. So that's that first one, which is real important. It's like, when you leave today and somebody asks you, as they inevitably will, why are we doing this agile thing? Your response, you need to have a common response. And it can't be, well, it's the strategy, don't you know? Didn't you read the memo, right? Or actually, we had one client say, well, it's because we were doing work with them, we were doing development work with them, and we suggested they go agile. So they did an executive workshop. And then when I asked them, why are you doing this Agile thing? They said, well, because you guys told us to. That can't be your answer to everybody in the organization.
Yeah, we have a part of the course that we teach too for executives where we're hoping that the takeaway that they come away with if we ask them that question is it's just good business.
Yep.
Like, why do you do Agile? It's just good business. Like, we're going to mitigate risk and we're going to get more value delivered more often and we're going to learn faster. Like, it's just good business. Like,
if they're bought in that far, yeah, that's great, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
But often they're like, you know, you'll get some skeptics. I'm used to it because they probably had some bad taste in their mouth. But,
sure.
But I want, you know, like, I will likely try to ask, like, what's the objective next year? Is it customer? I've had all sorts of things from better customer relationships to quality sometimes in big products. It's like, this is our focus next year. And the CIO sets it, is that we want to fix quality or we want to get better time to market and we want better market share. Whatever that is, like that's likely an objective you were having with or without Agile. You had with or without Agile. Now you need to understand how to explain how Agile gets you to that. So everybody here, if it's customer satisfaction, how's Agile going to help us with that? There's a direct path. So let's talk about that, right? If it's quality, how's Agile going to help us improve quality? Or how's being Agile going to help us with that? So that's the first one, why. And then the next one is where. It's like, it's where does this work? And we do get into, this isn't a silver bullet. I need to give them an out, I find, with executives. I need some of them to be able to say, it's not for me. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. If what you're doing is predictable and there's no issues and everything you're planning was working out great, then you don't need, why would you change? Yep. So I need to give them that out, that this isn't for every place. This is for that complex where we do not know what it is we're building. When nobody knows the outcome, we need to create a safe environment for experimentation. So pick your areas for agility. And then that leads us to who, which is leadership. So in that realm where there's so much uncertainty, what's the right way to lead? How do you best support these teams that are trying to increase agility? So we talk about decentralized decision making and a lot around turn the ship around as well.
Yep.
So in what the it's in psychological safety, which is a big piece of it, as I think Google did research across all their teams, and they said the best teams, it boiled down to one thing, which was psychological safety. They could do some and experiment and fail without fear.
I tend to find those conversations flow pretty easy when you have, I guess, when you have an executive group that really cares about the bottom line, they care about moving the organization forward because it is good business. And so when you go through some of the things like, one product owner can't do it all in a scaling situation, you have to delegate certain things and you have to have distributed decision-making. That's how companies run. Like if you say one CEO can't do it all, no one's like, no, they, of course they, you know, we need 10 CEOs because they can't do it all. No, you don't add more CEOs. You delegate. Like
exactly.
We delegate all the time in organizational structure.
One Santa Claus rule, right?
Yeah. But sometimes
how does Santa Claus deal with all the kids? Yeah.
There's some people who look at that and they're like, no, we need 20 product owners. And it's like, well, maybe you don't, right? Or maybe you do in some context, you need some skill set there, but you still need that decision making, that quickness in the decision making. So
I do a talk around scaling the product owner role. And it ultimately, I did this activity where it's like, let's list everything that product owners do. And it's just like a list of like 40 or 50 things. And then now let's divide them out from strategic versus tactical. So in that same, like, you know, from a product owner is acting more as a scribe receiving stuff or a proxy, it was more tactical things versus a more entrepreneurial strategic thinking product owner, we would divide out all this work. And then I'd ask the question, which of these are harder at scale? And it's always the tactical things, the things that you can delegate, right? So it's the ones that remain tactical that find it hard to scale, because if your job is to answer all the questions for everybody, of course, one person can't do that. If your job is to write all the requirements, of course, one. But if your job is to set a clear vision, right, and to make sure that the customer is clear and to make sure everybody understands how we measure success around here and what value looks like, that isn't going to be that much harder with like two teams and five teams and 10 teams, right? It doesn't change that much. So the strategic stuff isn't what gets hard. It's the tactical stuff.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and anyways, to finish that off, like it's why are we doing Agile? Where does it apply? How do we lead? Then it's like the product versus project thing. That's the that's the what. What are we doing here? It's more about products and value than it is about time, budget, scope. So that's where we get into metrics, better ways to measure not just your product, but the success of an Agile adoption. How do you know this Agile adoption is successful? I've literally had an executive say, we'll know it's successful when everybody's certified. Like, is that really the objective here? Is that what you're paying the money for? The fact that they're certified hopefully will achieve or give you some success, right? Is what your hope is. But what would that be when time to marketing? Like, so why of Agile? How do we measure that? And then the last one, I always say, the last one is whenever I'm meeting people on the ground and I say, hey, I'm about to meet your leadership team, what message can I bring them? The thing I hear over and over again is we're doing way too many things, way too much going on. Yeah. So that last piece is really to give me my chance to lay that one out there. Is like, what is the capacity of your organization? How many concurrent initiatives can you handle? And I know they don't know the answer because nobody ever does, but is it really that hard to measure, right? So it's how do we manage our work in progress?
Yep.
And at the portfolio level,
yep.
And it begins with understanding what it could even be. And we at the executive level have to make the tough decisions of what to do when we bring in one more initiative than we have capacity. Because we all understand, it's not hard to make the point that that's going to slow everybody down. So how do we signal it, and who's going to be able to have the courage to make a tough decision, stop something, bring on another team, invest in making an increasing capacity if that's what we need to do. So those are the five topics that I usually hit on whenever I'm with.
Yeah, they're great.
I've done it in an hour long talk. I've done it in a 2-day thing. Like you can go pretty deep in any one of those five areas.
I'm laughing when you brought up the working over capacity, because it's just like I'm still blown away. I shouldn't be blown away, but I'm blown away because so years ago I had a talk called Cultivate Organizational Agility, Make the Hidden Visible. And there's one part of that talk where I basically refer to organizations that catch this disease, and the disease is high levels of WIP, working over capacity. And you know, the next organization down the road, they catch it too, and everyone's got it. It's just like, and if you think about corporate America, you know, Fortune 500 companies around the world, like point to the organizations that are over capacity. It's got to still be 80-20 rule. 80% of organizations operate over capacity because it's probably still project mindset, and you can't see it. You can't see what you're doing when you start another initiative. So you do it because you think it's a good idea. And then it just creates this mess, right? But those organizations that keep it simple, organize the number of people they have around lists. Now I'm going to start teaching Scrum, I guess, but around lists, you pull from that list, you operate inevitably at capacity. Like it is so, like on paper, you know, if we're at a bar, back of the napkin, agility is so simple. Like it is so simple. It's common sense, but it really is hard because organizations have this momentum of where they're at today. They got there from decades of different thinking, and to slow it down now, it seems so counterintuitive. If you go into an executive and you're like, here's what we're going to do tomorrow. We're going to get everyone in a room. We're going to reorganize into like long-lived product definitions, and we're going to stop all the work in progress. They'd be like, no way, right? But it'd probably be the best thing that organization needed if they really want change to happen.
Yeah. And I mean, I empathize with them. I'm sure you've been on that path too. It's like even in our own lives, right? There's stuff we know we should be doing. I know what to do to lose weight, guys. Why? Yep. I know exactly what I need to do. It's not a mystery. Why am I not doing it? It's just everything. It's too easy to let the distractions in. So these executives who probably have a lot of stress, any layer of management, and issues come in and like, we should totally do this. Hey, can somebody take this off my hands? Go do it. Cause I've already got a lot going on. And they hand it off to one of their managers who's like afraid to say no. And yeah. they're making now the team to do some extra work and trying to build a project and borrow people for it. And they're all just trying to make do
yep.
with the situation. You know, my garage is still a mess. I knew I should clean that up. Why? I know what to do. Why am I not doing it? So it is, it's, like you said, bringing visibility to it over and over again. That's what I do that with executives quite a bit, actually, is like, let's come up with some way of looking at it. Like a portfolio roadmap is something that I put together. I have my own spreadsheet for it. And it's just, can we see it? And when trying to figure out what your capacity is, just let's start with number of teams. How many teams do you have?
Yep.
And if they don't know that, how many people, let's just divide it by, I don't know, somewhere between 5 and 10. That's about the capacity that you have. And so what are those, like if that's 100 teams, then what are your top 100 initiatives? Which initiatives are so important you want multiple teams on, right?
Yep.
That you want to invest more into that is going to consume multiple teams at a lower, rate or efficiency, I guess, what's the right word there, but
yeah.
And just visualize it, help them visualize that.
I like that because, again, I love that you throw the empathy into it. I mean, of course I'm thinking that, but you can know it, right? It can be on paper. It can make sense. You can even, when you hear it, it's like, I get that, but then you need the work. You need the heart. We gave a talk today and I threw this quote out there. So Jeff and I coach basketball and I've been watching all these YouTube videos on basketball and Bobby Knight from Indiana, right? He has this quote, most people have the will to win, but very few people have the will to prepare to win. And I think it translates to so many things in the business world, right? Everybody says we want to be more agile. Everybody.
Yeah.
But making the hard changes, it takes somebody to come in, right? I want to be more fit. But once in a while, Jeff has to give me a little nudge and be like, hey, Chad, did you work out today? Because I know I should work out today, but I need somebody to nudge me, right? So it's interesting in our industry, we have all these job titles. We have consultant. We have agile trainers. We have agile coaches. We have agile advisors. We have all these different job titles. At the end of the day, I think we're all trying to do the same thing. We're trying to move a company forward, mm-hmm. right? Continuous improvement mindset. But I wonder if sometimes the approaches get in the way of that real positive change. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it, you're seeing it, right? In the industry these days is I think there has been a bit of a backlash. Not too strong of a word on coaching and trying to make change happen. I think the pendulum has swung quite strongly towards, you know, pure coaching, asking powerful questions all the time and not really doing anything.
Yep.
Or, you know, people with not that much experience, you know, they take a 5-day class or something and now they call themselves a coach, doing organizational change management. Right. And,
yep.
They'd never run a business. You know, I think that is an issue out there quite a bit. And I like the coach. I like the real coaching out. Like you said, Jeff might like tell you to get your passing gear.
Yeah, exactly.
People will pay for that. But that's I'm paying you to hold me accountable. And I don't think that's what coaches see their jobs as. Is keeping a rhythm and coming down on me if I break that and asking me to make a commitment. That level of coaching is not what we're seeing out there. True coaching, where it's like, if you want to do this, I'll do this with you. It's going to cost you because it's going to be my time too. And I want a commitment from you, not a lifetime, but at least for a while. And then like, if you commit to working out every other day, I will commit to be there with you.
Yep.
But, and I'll even give you some options. Like what type of car do you, is it running? Okay. What's a good time for you? 2:00? Great. But if you don't show up, we're going to have a conversation here, right? And I don't think our coaches that we typically see in the agile space are at that level, right? It's like we're not holding them to that. And I think we should see coaching as a skill, not a role or a title.
Yep. Totally agree. 100%
agree.
It's one tool that every leader should have in their arsenal is to be a good coach.
Yep.
And our company changed our names. Like, we don't even, I'm not even going to use the word coach. We have consultants that can coach, right? We are agile. Sometimes we do things for you. And sometimes we pull out some coaching techniques, but, you know,
Yeah, we use advising and we use, coaching, peer coaching might be part of that. So is mentoring. So is consulting. And there's many other stances, right? There's facilitation. There's so many other things that we do inside of that. That's just, you have to have all those. And I don't think many people that maybe have the agile coach, at least there's some that just have one of those stances and it kind of gives everybody all the other ones in a bad name. We don't have a name to like differentiate that. And I don't know that people even know to ask for that. So I think that's the hard part about it. It's such a new role that people don't know that, hey, these are all the skills, the multi-skills we need to be successful in this role.
Don't you guys see it with the Scrum Master role as well?
Yeah. Like, I mean,
what does a Scrum Master do all day? Is still probably the most searched thing. And the videos that are made around that get the most hits because people really don't know. And I think one of the big mistakes that we've made in this industry is kind of, we're not really asking that about project managers. Like, we're about to do this big initiative. Should we have somebody lead it? They've traditionally been called project managers, right?
Yeah.
And now in the agile space, oh no, project managers, we can't say that word anymore. So what do we have instead, right? We may have a Scrum Master and a project manager. And I think alienating them was wrong. I think maybe teaching project managers who got there for a reason how to maybe lead in an agile way might be a better approach. Yeah. Part of me wants to, you know, there's all that the word Scrum Master is kind of controversial these days, but I'm not even really joking when I say I think it should be renamed to like Scrum Manager. Manage the Scrum process, right? Your team has a process based off of the Scrum framework and you're accountable for it. That's right in the Scrum guide, right? So manage it. Manage doesn't mean own it. Manage means a good manager will get the team to own it, right? Find a way to own it. Just like a good coach will get their person to own their routine, their workout, right? I feel like it's too light.
I think it's a good analogy to what we typically have as the word manager in the industry. I would love a paradigm shift completely away from that and into more of like, I don't know, maybe it's like Scrum improvement advisor. You're there to advise on the improvement of Scrum. Whenever, and I always have a chip on my shoulder, but when I hear manage, I think control. Because if you look it up in the dictionary, you to manage something is to control something. And when you look at an organization, it typically means you're controlling certain financial pieces and sometimes controlling people. And so I've drifted away from it over the years. But I get it. It's an industry title, and that's fine. Yeah. But if we were going to shift it, I'd love to hear even more new titles.
I have two, but I think I'm coming back a bit, right? I think I've kind of gone and I'm like, maybe we went too far.
Yeah.
Because, I get what you're saying.
It's aspirational.
SIA would be a weird certification. We have to at least with Scrum Manager, it could still be like the PSM certification, Professional Scrum Manager. But anyway, that's besides the point. But I get it, man. But what about product manager, right? Is that a bad word?
I don't know.
I think you have to, like a lot of things, when someone says the word agile, you have to say, are we talking past each other? What do you mean by that? Because I think the same thing when I say product manager, what do you mean by that? What do they actually do? And if they say, well, they're also a product owner and they do the strategic and the tactical stuff. Cool. That's great. I think we're aligned. And if you divide the role, then there's trade-offs that you've made as an organization to do that, you know? So then you just have to be aware of those and maybe you're okay with that. I don't know.
If the word manager means accountable, right? They're accountable for the product. And then like product manager, process manager, accountable for the process, accountable for the product.
I'm imagining a world where the next revision in the Scrum Guide, there's one change and it changes Scrum Master to Scrum Manager. Can you just imagine the internet melting down? Like we might actually bring some of the internet down. I know our community is small, but we're getting bigger. You know, Agile is quite ubiquitous.
make it a big to-do celebration of the 2024 Scrum Guide. I can't wait to bring you unveil this new release. And it's just,
oh man,
that would be a shot. That would be interesting. Yeah.
You know, I don't want to dig up old. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I think some of it's even published materials, but like, if you even go back to Ken and Mike Beadle's first book, right? Like, the one with the colors on the, it's over my bookshelf. I can't reach it right now. But
from development or,
if you go back, right, there's been a lot of changes to the verbiage, and there was a lot more kind of project management. I don't even know. I'd have to go look. I almost feel like the phrase Scrum Manager might even be in there, but
it was not Scrum Master. It was, I think it was Manager. It was Project
might
Manager.
Have, yeah, yeah, it might have been.
In the very first paper, the white paper from, yeah, Uppsala 95 or whatever, they didn't mention Scrum Master. It was Manager.
Yeah.
And I think I heard this right, but I heard it from Ken Schreiber, but I could have misheard it. But he told me about the first Scrum Master, where it came from. And the story he said was, like, he started getting the same thing we were talking about. Like, manager's more about control. We're looking at servant leadership in this way, is like decentralized decision making. So he told the manager on this Scrum project, "We can't be called manager anymore." And she's like, "What? What do I put on my business cards yet?" And in true Ken fashion, he was like, "I don't know. You call yourself whatever you want. I don't give a damn." And so she goes, "Fine, I'll be the master of Scrum then," right? As kind of a joke. And then the rest of the team made fun of that the rest of the time, calling her the Scrum Master. And then when they next published it, that's what he used. I think in the book, then it became Scrum Master. I don't know if there's another version before that, but it's almost like just a coincidence. And he said that about a lot of the terms. He's like, I didn't think about what it would end up becoming. I just wanted these names to sound different from what people are used to. Yeah. Backlog's a horrible name, right? It's stuck. Sprint is a horrible name. It's like, it sounds exhausting. But it just, he insisted it had to be different. Otherwise, people just associate it with what they're already used to.
Yeah, that's great. All right. Yeah.
We solved all the problems.
Yeah, I think maybe. So. We at least started some. Maybe we poked some problems and started some new ones today. But thanks for coming on, Don. I guess at this time, is there anything you want to plug or promote to our listeners?
Well, I guess just check out improving.com. It's my company. We're going fast. We're up to 1,600 people now building products for people. So. We create agility in all sorts of ways, whether you're going to the cloud or implementing AI, right? Any way to help improve the agility of your business, we're doing it in all facets, not just on the training and coaching side of things, consulting side of things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Love it. We'll leave that in the show notes. I mean, it's improving.com still, right?
Yep. Improving.com.
What a domain to own, right?
It is. Yeah.
You know, on other episodes, we've talked about one word equity, and like, that's a pretty good domain to own, right? Improving.com. Yeah. I mean, that's great.
We were, I don't know if you, and this may be a whole other episode of how we got to that. We were improvingenterprises.com, which was a pain to write. Yeah.
I remember it. And then I don't know. We'll have to talk offline sometime, like how much money you guys had to pay to get improving.com.
Yeah, we had a whole strategy around acquiring it. It was, it's interesting. Maybe over some beers.
Yeah, that's a story for later. All right, awesome. Thanks so much, Don. This was a blast. Well, I'm sure we'll see you maybe in person at some point here in the near future.
I would expect so.
Awesome.
If you found value in today's episode, share this with a friend. Until next time, get agile and stay agile.